This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are not having a very good time with Dr. Evan Levine, but it's not your fault,
Dr.
Levine.
We're having a very informative time.
Yeah, there's another piece of this that we haven't even touched, and that is the whole rest of, part of the story at least, with nursing homes. And how does one figure out where to go? What do you do when you're in one? How do we keep doctors from P-R-E-Y, preying on the infirm, the demented, the dying?
I'm not a big fan, I must say, of most of the nursing homes I've come across, and I'm certainly not a big fan of many of the physicians that go there. Let's face it, the top quality physician is not going to be a nursing home doc. He's not going to see 40 people in one day and sign off on all the charts, etc. That's not going to happen. So the better physicians are not there. The other problem I have at the nursing homes is that very often my patients are sent from the hospital to the nursing home, yet the doctor never calls me to ask me questions about the patient.
So what do you do? I mean, this is a real dilemma.
Yeah,
and
what do
as
you
the
do?
Baby boom generation heads in that direction.
Yeah, now this is getting
I'm
personal.
Staying out.
It's personal.
Well, but if you
can. If you can, no matter what, if you can, family support, help at home, if you can somehow stay out of the nursing home. It's a miserable place, by and large.
And then if you have to go there.
If you have to go there, you need your family members to come see you and make sure everything's okay. And if you need to see a doctor, let's say you're there and you need to go see the cardiologist. Well, the nursing home doesn't want to send you to your cardiologist because they have their own cardiologist. And sometimes the nursing home has to pay for the transportation that's taken out of their budget. So they'll encourage you to see their cardiologist. The other thing that happens quite often, especially if mom or dad is demented, is the nursing home doc, he'll start ordering all kinds of tests. Or he'll start ordering consults. And I discuss one patient, an imaginary patient in particular, and this could be in the hospital or the nursing home. Let's say mom is at the nursing home or the hospital and she's a little short of breath. And this, I've seen this dozens of times. Well, normally a good quality internist can handle that, but he's got a lot of friends that he's got to feed or reward. So he calls the cardiologist. Oh, maybe she's short of breath because she's got heart failure. And he calls his friend the pulmonologist. Maybe she's short because she's got some lung disease. And then he calls the gastroenterologist. You know, she had a little bit of agita, a little bit of stomach pain. I'll call him in. And, well, maybe she had a low-grade fever. I'll call my friend, the infectious disease person, in. You know what? This is simple bread-and-butter medicine. But they call in all their buddies, and it really is. It's like the vultures preying, you know, preying on the carrion. It's disgusting.
So
it goes on particularly in demented nursing home patients.
So they pass the body around. The good news, unlike buzzards, the buzzards consume what they're, and this one you can just keep passing around.
You know, well, that's why, you know, you got to make sure if your relative goes to a nursing home, you make darn sure that they call you before they ever request a consult, do a consult, or do any study. Because there are people out there making money off poor mom and dad that needs to rest and be comfortable and be taken care of, but not to be used as a guinea pig.
You say don't let yourself go into research.
Never
either.
Do research, but I want to. I know you're not an economist, but I found myself, when I got through with this, my core impression was, trying to look after myself and my friends and my relatives, that you can't be nice in this system. And that you know, if anything, one, you can't trust anybody very much, and you always have to be constantly looking out for yourself or for somebody that's involved in this. And that there's sort of the squeaky wheel, whether it's in the hospital or with regard to test or a whole range of other things. And I found myself wondering at what point, if 5% of the people are, and this is just an economic question, if 5% of the people are squeaky wheels, then the economics of the hospital or the practice or whatever, you absorb that. because you're making so much money on the other 95%. If 10% are squeaky wheels, and my question, and this is, really goes to the institutional challenge that we have, mm-hmm. how do we make this better since the guardians don't seem to be guarding us? You know, if enough of us routinely, at some point, the institution will say it's cheaper to provide appropriate care than it is to deal with what is now a plague of people who are asking embarrassing questions.
Right. Well, I think we do need to ask questions. You're
is
right.
Is that why you wrote this book? Do you want lots of us to be as upset as you seem to be?
Well, I think we all need to be upset, again, that 43 million people are uninsured, and I think we all need to be upset that we're wondering how the heck we're going to pay for this Medicare prescription drug program when it could or might be paid for if we use generic drugs, and no one's discussing this. My suspicion is that the pharmaceutical industries are lobbying against my ideas. But let me just say one thing. There are great people out there, great physicians, that are finding it hard to work in this environment, okay? And I must say that the majority of physicians out there are wonderful, hardworking, good people who went to medical school to take care of people, not to be bothered or harangued by malpractice lawyers, by drug reps, by their minority, albeit duplicitous, fellow physicians. And it's very hard for them to practice medicine. That's the problem. We're rewarding the wrong people here, folks. We're rewarding the malpractice attorneys, the pharmaceutical industries, the CEOs of these big insurance companies and hospitals, and the bad doctors. That's the problem. We're not rewarding the patients and the good doctors. The whole system is topsy-turvy. It's like the weather here. It's nice in New York, and it's snowing in Atlanta.
It is nice in New York and snowing in Atlanta. The complexity of that, in a country where the dollar seems to be almighty, how do you get individuals and groups of individuals to say, that ain't right? There's something more important than the bottom line.
Well, I think we need some elected officials to come out and say something, but I don't see it in either party. Maybe Ralph Nader is, but unfortunately he's not going to win. You know, he's just going to take votes away from the other guy. I don't see anyone coming out with the right plan. No one is. But everyone has, in the top five things, what's on your mind, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America, is health care. And no one really is discussing this. Maybe Dean did because he was a physician.
But specifically, if I want to do something about this, I'm just Jill Schmo. Where do I begin? I can look out for myself.
Right,
I
on a personal level, you can make sure you're getting the less costly generic drugs. If you really find a physician who's doing some duplicitous act, then you could report him, I suspect, to the Office of Professional Misconduct. You should reward the good physician. If you find a great physician, tell your friends. But it's really hard. The system is huge. This is the biggest industry in the country. As an individual, there's really not much you can do, but you can take care of yourself, your family, and your friends. And let's hope, and one of the reasons I wrote this book, let's hope we wake some people up here and some people start making the right decisions.
There's another piece of this. We've been pounding on the institutions, the hospitals and the insurers and doctors. But you also tell stories of patients who repeatedly don't show up for appointments.
Oh, I hate that.
And the irresponsibility, and I assume part of this is because it's become adversarial, that there's been what you describe, I think, seems to be just an overall breakdown. But, you know, to miss an appointment once, you know, we all have circumstances not to call, particularly since we're all walking around with cell phones, most of us, seems odd. Mm-hmm. It seems irresponsible.
It
and
is.
Yet you say it as a fairly
it's
common...
It's harassment. How about patients that call you up on a Sunday night because they ran out of their non-emergent medication, could you refill it? I mean, I'm on call 24/7, and this is what I tell my patients, but I'm not on call for this. You're right.
Your specialty is as a cardiologist, and I can hear particularly people who would be ill-served by what you're saying, don't pay attention to him. It's like Dr. Susan Love. She doesn't know what she's talking about either. That it would be very easy to say a person whose specialty is X and such, dismiss them. Things are just fine. Don't pay any attention. He's not an investigative reporter. Why would somebody listen to you instead of this big institution, the biggest business in the country?
Right. Well, first, I'm also an internist. I'm a cardiologist. And I consider myself, sort of a citizen soldier, if Stephen Ambrose was still around. I'm the guy who sees patients, who deals with the drug reps, who goes to the hospital every day, who has arguments with the hospital administrators, who sees the bad things going on inside the hospital. I see the whole system. I'm there. The guy sitting at the desk doesn't know what's going on. And if he does, he's not telling you the truth.
This is Dr. Evan Levine. We've got a couple more minutes with him. When we return in a moment, be with us.